You're listening to the More on Manufacturing podcast, where we talk about improving the value and operation of your business. Join Mike, Kevin, and the occasional guest for the latest on sales optimization, operational leadership, cash flow management, lean strategies, preparing for the sale of your company, business intelligence, and much more.
Hi, I'm Mike Sibley, leader of the James Moore Manufacturing team. I'm here with Kevin Golden, one of my partners and a member of the James Moore Manufacturing team. Today, we are joined by a special guest, Patty Gander. Patty is the owner of Business Essential Skills Training. Patty has over 35 years of experience, manufacturing experience in aerospace, defense, and electronics manufacturing. She's a seasoned manufacturing veteran, holding the positions of Vice President of Operations, Plant Manager, General Manager, and Lean Implementation Manager. She is a certified Lean Six Sigma Black Belt and has been employed in both commercial and military manufacturing environments. So today's show, we're talking about operational success, and which is, you know, the key to building value in any industry, which, you know, from our standpoint, value is exactly what we talk about on this show. We want to work on things that build value within the company. And certainly operations is a big part of that. There's many, many different niches within manufacturing, but there's so many operational issues that we see across the industry. So today we're going to talk to Patty about some of the most common things that she's seen in terms of errors, issues, concerns, and, you know, how she goes about identifying them, things that she's recognized that can help you maybe think about ways you're doing things and some possible ways to attack this to make those improvements. So Patty, welcome to the show, and thank you for being here.
Thanks. I love the word seasoned. It just means old.
Well, you know, I said 35 years of experience, you know, so you must have started at like 4 or 5 years old, right? So,
negative number.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So like minus five.
Right.
Well, and Patty, obviously you've got a lot of background, a lot, you know, when we're talking about operational success, I mean, there's a million different ways you could, or topics you could go on about, I'm sure. Especially given your experience and what you've been involved in. But, you know, I think you, how do they say, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? So when you're going into an environment like that and you're, and someone calls upon you for your needs, your advice, right? Kind of where do you operate from an operation standpoint? Where do you really begin? What is your focus on?
I start with the leadership team and having a conversation with the leadership team, and I'm looking for things process oriented, because you know, you get to you know, as companies start growing, processes used to be, we have a conversation about it and I go tell somebody to go do it, it makes it happen. And then as the company starts to grow, communication starts to be a bigger and bigger issue, and then, you know, they lack the process to ensure that things are being done in a systematic way. So I look at organizations as kind of these big Chinese domino puzzles, right? So, you know, the ones that you tap a domino and, you know, so from my perspective, it's, you know, when the customer reaches out, and they tap that first domino. If the company's put together well, and there's all kinds of processes and procedures in place to ensure that things happen, then the last domino falls when it's supposed to, and it provides the customer for whatever they interacted with the company for. But most of the time, what you have is you have all these gaps all over the domino puzzle, right? You got management running around trying to tap these dominoes to ensure that whatever the customer wants from them happens. And invariably, because they don't have good systems or good processes in place, they either forget to tap a domino. In some cases, they tap the domino at a sequence, or they tap it in the wrong direction, right? And then you have a catastrophic failure. So I have a conversation with management, with the leadership team, to try and figure out where are those gaps in their dominoes, their gaps in the system where they lack process, because process communicates need. So that's usually where I start.
So in terms of, you know, starting with that, do you often find, though, that, you know, kind of, because when I'm looking at this as well, and in fact, I was just talking to a client about this yesterday, about growth and scalability and having, looking at the process. And when you hear about a problem, you're thinking, okay, there's a lack of a process. When people lack understanding, there's a lack of a process. But, you know, in order to really tackle it from a business standpoint, how often are you seeing they just lack generally a strategy to begin with? And starting with that.
It's frequently, and that's one of the first two areas that I concentrate on is from a leadership perspective and strategy. Those are really the top two things that I look at. And when you look at strategy, usually what you find out is they don't have a strategic plan. They have a tactical plan. They, you know, and everything is more day-to-day, week-to-week operations, and they can't sit there and say, this is what we plan on doing in the next 12 months. This is what we plan on doing in the next 18 or 24 months. Everything is very short. It's very short duration, which means it's very tactical in nature.
Right.
And that's fine, you know, but it doesn't help the business sustain and it doesn't help the business grow. It just takes care of the day-to-day activity. So it's basically almost like they put together a firefighting plan.
Yeah, they're just trying to figure out how to get product A out the door right now.
Right.
Not worried about the general fact that they've got orders coming in, or they're trying to grow this particular thing, or they're trying to develop team members, or there's so many different, like you said, there's so many different pieces that you have to put in order there. And, you know, you're fighting fires and without a comprehensive ability to put everything in order. And I think that, I don't know, when you start kind of breaking it down, I tend to see that more in companies that are really on that growth, have gone from a really small company. And the way I see it is when you're small, you can put your arms around everything really easily. The owner or the CEO, that they can jump in anywhere. They can wear many different hats. They can do that. And almost to a point where they don't necessarily even, you know, they can do it without really being under a whole lot of stress. But then you start seeing them get to 5 million, 10 million, 15, 20, and so on and so on. And so it's that growth without that plan. Those companies seem to struggle the most. I don't know if you've seen something similar.
I do. And I usually describe the companies when they first start out, everybody's sitting around the picnic table together, right? And so we're easily communicating with one another, you know, and then the company grows a little bit. Maybe we split up into two different picnic tables and you might have, and when we split, we're splitting functionally, right? We're sitting at different tables around the people that we work with on a day-to-day basis. And then it gets a little bit bigger and we add a little bit more picnic tables. And pretty soon every picnic table is each the small function within the organization, but the picnic tables aren't talking to each other. So maybe within the function they're doing okay, but unfortunately they haven't created the system because the picnic tables are not talking to one another where that becomes the system dialogue. And so a lot of times what happens is, you know, that entrepreneur that created it, you know, they really understand you know how to build the product or how to design the product. But you start getting to that higher level and they don't necessarily have the skill set to bring the tables together, right, and create that system. They don't necessarily have the skill set that can do the deeper dive accounting things that like you guys do to understand what their costs are. They don't understand how to do customer segmentation. They don't understand, you know, how to put a strategic plan together. And then from the strategic plan, they don't understand then that the strategic plan drives everything. It drives your hiring plan. It drives your training plan. It drives your customer and market segmentation. It drives, you know, what's the technology that you need to have in the future. It drives your financial plan. It, you know, everything is driven from that strategic plan. And because you don't have the strategic plan, everything is being operated on, I describe organizations as 3C, they're concrete, carpet, and corner office. Everything is focused on the concrete. And the things that really, you know, that drive the concrete are the carpet and the corner office. And that's the piece that's not part of the strategic plan. The tactical plan happens on the concrete and it's reactionary. They can only react to whatever they're given. And the strategic plan is what gives them to be, you know, not reactionary. But when you're operating on a tactical plan, operations is just being reactive. And that's the biggest issue as being reactive.
Yeah. And so when you're, you know, one of the things, and I swear talking processes and strategic plans is like my love language here. I my favorite stuff to talk about, as sick as that sounds. But, you know, how have you been able to work with these entrepreneurs to get them to understand the need for a strategic plan and to kind of overcome the that, you know, you start talking processes and strategies sometimes, and you start seeing the but this, or I can't this, and how have you been able to kind of get somebody to think about that differently and overcome that resistance?
Yeah, I joke around with people when I go into a company and I'm doing this kind of analysis for them. What I'm telling them is their baby's ugly, in a nice way, you know. So trying to get them to understand the, first of all, they have to understand the difference between a strategic plan and a tactical plan. So I sit there and I talk about what they consider to be the strategic plan, and a lot of it has to do with, well, what's the time horizon for that. Right. And once they start understanding that, that the things that they're dealing with have a short time horizon, and it doesn't provide them a long runway. It just is simply saying, this is what I need to get done this week to satisfy the customer. Right. So getting them to understand that piece of it, and then explaining and taking that tactical and looking at all the different things in their tactical plan and say, okay, if we divided these tactical steps up and kind of bucketed them into common themes, what would be the long-term goal that you would have based on all these tactical things? And then when they start talking about the long-term goal around that common theme, around the four or five tactical things in the bucket, they start to see the difference between, okay, now I understand what strategic looks like versus tactical. But first you have to kind of get them to see the common themes, the time horizon, and then what would the long-term goal look like if we put that theme together in terms of where you want to take the organization. And then you can see the light bulb go on. It's, you know, you like the cartoons, the bulb goes on up over their head, and then they start understanding. The other piece of that is getting to them to understand it's not just them. Because what happens in those smaller companies that are growing is that, you know, the owner of the company, the entrepreneur, thinks that they're the ones that have to put the strategy together. And getting them to understand that, you know, you got to rely on your team to come in and work on the strategy together, because you're only going to get your vision, and mm-hmm. you're blind. You have blinders on, you only see through this tunnel of what you know. You know, you need to have other people in that so that you're getting a more 360 degree perspective of it. So, you know, it can't just be you. It's got to be other people right. to participate in it.
Well, and I think it's important to, because of that, you know, to get the why. Why are we doing this? What are we trying mm-hmm. to get everybody on board with what we're trying to do? And I think, you know, once you go from there, in my mind, you know, again, we're just having this conversation, when you get into sort of from strategy into building processes, you know, I think part of the strategy, if you're lacking processes or having difficulties or seeing issues, a lot of times, you know, training issues and turnover and, you know, backlog and, you know, bottlenecks are process and production layout and floor issues, yep. flow issues. And I, you know, one of the things that I talk about, I'd like to hear your opinion specifically as you kind of get into that side of things, is that the people doing the work are subject matter experts in that area. They're yep. doing it every single day. They probably know where the problems are, just nobody's ever asked them. Perfect. Or, you know, why we're doing it this way, who knows? This is what I was just told to do, but it seems like yep. a really slow way to do it. And I know if we did this, it could be a lot better, or, you know, those kind of things. So it's going, getting their input, not only at a strategy level, but as you dive down into more of the flow, the throughput side of yep. things, and building that and the scalability that can come with that. So curious on your opinion on that.
Yeah, I mean, so I've seen in my career, I suffered early on in my career from a syndrome called I'm the smartest person in the room until I figured out that I wasn't. And I figured out really quickly that I wasn't, you know, that I needed to talk to the people that actually did the work, because they know it. You know, I only see a version of it. I read a book somewhere. It says that processes are how you designed it, how you think they work, and how they actually work is really kind of. So you need to have all three of those, right? And right. I've seen in my career, when I thought I was the smartest person in the world and I designed the process and I handed it to the person doing the job, I mean, I literally could hear them saying, okay, if you want me to do it this way, I will, but it's not going to work. But you think you're so darn smart, I'll do it.
Right.
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 Versus when you sit down with them and you go, look, this is what I'm thinking. Okay. Sure. Now let's put our heads together and take what I've started from, because this is what I need. Give me your expertise on how I get what I need. So I start with the, what do I want out of the process? Right. This is my goal. Now give me your input on how we reach the goal. I shouldn't tell you the steps to get there. I should just tell you from a leadership perspective, my job is to tell you what the outcome needs to be. Everybody else has got to tell me the best way to get there, right? I'm not going to draw the map. You help me draw the map. I just tell you, this is where I want to be. And then that, you know, and that's how I've seen getting people. And the piece that I learned early on in my career too was, is that if I actively engage them in that, they have skin in the game now, right? They own the process. If I hand it to them, there's no ownership. It's just like, it's successful, it's not successful, it's not mine. But if you ask for their opinion, now they have ownership, they have responsibility, and they're going to do what it takes to make the outcome successful. So that, you know, that's where leadership has to do that.
Yeah, the only warning I ever put in on that is don't ask people for their opinion, take it, and then not do anything with it.
That's because worse that's, than not asking
why
them
am I
at
wasting
all.
My time?
Sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
No.
Absolutely.
So that, I mean, that's really, those are really great points. Patty, thanks for sharing that. I like that what you said at the end, that, you know, not, Mike mentioned you got to not only hear the advice, hear their input, but then take that into consideration and show that, because otherwise it's a waste of time. And I know we're going to talk about it a little bit, maybe some labor and all, but I like that also, that buy-in feature there. That's something I took away there. That's really that sense of ownership, especially in a tight labor market that we're in. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so now we spent some good time there on, okay, hey, coming in, getting strategy, you know, from not a tactical plan, but the strategic plans, and then get, you know, helping others formulate maybe a plan to get there, right? What's next after that? I mean, you know, in manufacturing, all a lot we hear about is technology and other advances and things you always hear about, especially in this day and age. Is that kind of a focus where you may head towards next, or after we've got the kind of strategic set aside?
Yeah, I think coupled with the strategic plan, there needs to be a technology plan that kind of is coupled into that strategic plan. Because you have to understand, you know, what technologies you think you're going to need to help drive the future. And especially since, because we are in a tight labor market, you know, you're only going to get just so much capacity out of people, right? You're limited to what they could, and you're limited to the space too. So you have just enough space, you have just enough people to do it in order to achieve that level of capacity. And people are fallible. People will make mistakes. So depending on, you know, your need for increased capacity, the complexity of the jobs that are getting done, and the need for that higher level quality, technology really is kind of a key in order to get all of those things, plus a tight labor market. You know, if you can't hire people, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, whether or not you have the ability to train people. It doesn't matter if you have the space on the production floor. You know, none of those things matter if you can't hire a stable workforce. So using technology coupled with people, right? Here's the things that technology can give me. Here are the things that the human capital side, the human resource can give me. How do I put those together in terms of a plan to go forward to increase my overall capability, increase my capability, and then increase the level of quality and things like that that I can provide my customer? And it starts with having a really good technology plan. Plus, from a capital standpoint, how do you know what you're going to spend money on if you don't have a plan, and be able to prioritize it in order to determine, you know, this is the piece of equipment that I need to get from point A to point B. How am I going to finance that?
And that's something Kevin and I have kind of talked about over the last, I don't know, year or so, is putting a budget in place and a forecast and a cash flow forecast that includes CapEx understanding. So you can see not only the pieces of machinery that are need replaced, but how do you implement robotics and AI and some of the things that are out there. And the other thing that kind of goes along, that what's really interesting now when you start talking about technology, all these pieces of equipment are connected to the internet. So now you got cybersecurity issues you got to deal with on your on your machinery. And so you got to worry about that on top of everything else. But I think a lot of times there's, you mentioned being reactive before. Well, having your equipment or lacking some sort of technology plan in my mind is also very reactive. And I've even seen companies where they don't have a very good maintenance plan on their equipment. And so next thing you know, you got a piece of equipment that's going down and you have no plan to deal with that. So, you know, I look at technology, not only is that technology, but also mashed with the technology within the pieces of machinery and equipment that can really be a game changer for companies.
It also drives your hiring plan too, right? If you're going to bring in new technology, right, then you have to start looking at, you know, who do you have, what their knowledge, skills, and abilities are, and how does it mash up to your technology plan? And then saying, okay, I don't have that capability. I don't have the people that can do this. From a maintenance perspective, maintenance is a big part of that. You're bringing in pieces of equipment that are highly PLC driven, right? And your maintenance guys are used to dealing with equipment that is 50 years old, that doesn't have PLCs. You know, do they have the capability or even the desire to be trained in that? Or do I need to start looking at, you know, my hiring plan to start bringing in that level of capability, that level of trained employee? And then, you know, if I do have people that are capable of learning, then putting together a training plan so that I can upskill them in order to fill the need. So it is, I mean, it's that big domino series, right? It's like everything is connected. You can't just look at one and then look at the other. And then it has to be done, you know, all at that same top level, because you'll be reactionary. The piece of equipment goes down. You look at it and go, oh, I think it's a PLC problem. Who knows PLCs? I don't even know what the letters PLC mean, right?
Right.
Or we have to program it. I don't know how to program it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, and, you know, speaking of labor, and obviously every company we talk to, I'm sure the same with you, labor is one of the most difficult things. And you know, I tend to find that companies that have good processes and good cross-training. I mean, yesterday I just happened to be talking to a client where we were looking at, you know, some bottleneck issues, and, you know, they got one area that can produce a ton of WIP and bury the next stage. And I'm like, well, why even do that? Let's set the cadence to the next stage. And we've got people that are cross-trained, have them go in different places where you're having issues and don't just keep trying to do it that way. But that comes back to really building in processes and priorities and thinking how we do this and how do we set a manufacturing cadence and things like that. But coming back to, you know, this idea of training and cross-training that you had just mentioned, you know, how important, especially in my mind, from a retention standpoint, is it for companies to have a good system, have good cross-training, have good, you know, processes that people feel good about, as opposed to some sort of chaos that, and they don't even really know what they're doing. So your thoughts on that? A lot, that, yeah, was a lot, know, wrapped read, up there.
Yeah, I run into companies that's, you know, that because they don't have good processes, it's like, well, what are you training them to?
Good.
Right. So without a process, then you have no, you can't train them to anything or good work instructions. What are you training them to? You watch me do the job, right? That's like sitting in the seat of a car and learning how to drive by watching somebody drive, right? Till you get behind the wheel, you have no idea all the subtleties of driving. So without processes and work instructions, first, there's nothing to train to. And then I go into companies and they go, oh, yeah, yeah, we do cross training. And I'll ask somebody, I'll say, you've been cross trained? They're like, yeah. I said, when's the last time you did the job that you were cross trained for? Oh, it's been like about 8 months. So then you don't have cross training. Because you can't expect to show somebody how to do the job and then wait 8 months before you have them do it again. They're not trained. So they don't have systems, processes, work instructions to train people to. And then they believe they've done cross training without rotating people around so that training is fresh, and have a system in place that says, and this is how we're going to rotate people around. And then understanding, you have to have a culture too. There needs to be a culture of reward built into this, because if you're going to ask people to learn more and do more, they have an expectation of getting more. You got that what's in it for me thing, right? So you have to be able to have a culture where people are rewarded. I used to joke around one of the companies when I first started learning about this stuff like 20 something years ago in a company. That was my humbling experience, kind of put me on this road. And we put in a system we called learn and earn. The more you learn, the more you earn. Because if I had one person that knew how to do the job, you were not an asset. You were a liability, right? You become a greater asset for me the more you know how to do. And if you are an asset to me, I should reward you for being an asset. So it was, you know, figuring out that I needed to do that. And then understanding that, you know, in a good lean system, people move to where the work is. Because you're always going to have one area that's undertaxed while you have another area that's overtaxed. Why would you let people sit there and not be busy? People come to work to be busy and to do a good job. We fail them when we put them and we give them at, you know, half capacity and expect them to be fully engaged and happy to come there every day. And then you have the other people that are 150% and they can't do a good job because they just don't have the time to look at what they're doing and pay attention. So either direction, you're setting them up for failure. So figuring out where that balance is, getting them cross-trained and then move them into that work. And it keeps their mind engaged. They don't get bored.
Yeah. All right. Well, and when you said earlier, Patty, about when we were talking about technology and so forth, and well, here's what technology capacity and what it can do for us, and then what human capacity can do for us. I think the idea of the making adequate training and then, you know, making people learn and be more fulfilled and busy and so forth, it's also catering to what's the highest and best use for them, right?
Yes.
It's not just that one particular task, right? So proper education and training and so forth, then is not only helping you make, you know, hopefully make them more fulfilled and then makes them what I call sticky, wanting to stick around, wanting to stay, not yep. as much turnover, but then also, you know, gives them the, gives you the capacity to use them at their highest and best use, which yep. naturally normally comes with more fulfillment in your job and wanting to stay and learn and encouraging to learn more. Yep. And make things better, encouraging that feedback that maybe you need in that part of that strategic plan and how to carry those thoughts out. So again, you're very right. All that is definitely connected, even amongst these three main items we've talked about today. So
yeah, in lean terms, you know, one of the things that was added to, you know, what are the wastes in lean? A waste is anything that the customer doesn't value. And one of the things that was added not too long ago was underutilized employees. Underutilized skills, because it's a waste of, you know, utilizing people. If they can do more, they want to do more. And well, more, I mean, people are less productive. They're not more productive because they don't have to think about it. It doesn't make them faster. It makes them slower.
Right. Right. And you know, the old saying too goes, and this goes across the board, but, you know, work expands to the time available. So if they're just underutilized and they're bored and, you know, something that should take an hour all of a sudden takes a couple hours or more. And you're wondering, why is this taking so long to get done? Well, there's no urgency. They're not being challenged. And, you know, so you really all look at that from a standpoint of, you know, how are you utilizing people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I joke around because I teach Lean Six Sigma Green Belt. And I say frequently when I'm teaching, it's like, you know, whose fault is this? And I'm like, it's management's fault. Everything is management's fault, because management's job is to create an environment in which people can be successful. If people are not successful, management has not done their job.
Right. And I always blame management and the process. So, you know, I give people the benefit of the doubt when there's a bad process in place. Now, if you got a great process in place, you get the training, the accountability, all those kind of things in place, and somebody's struggling, okay, we may have an issue, but I sometimes can't tell, is it a bad, are they doing poorly because it's a bad process, a bad training, a bad, what is, because you can tell when things aren't good. So, you know, yep. I tend to give the benefit of the doubt until we know those are good set in place.
Yeah. And I'm sure you, like me, you can walk into a manufacturing facility, stand on the production floor and look out and see the chaos and mm-hmm. know. There's a lot going on here.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Patty, we are getting very close here to time, but really, really appreciate you having on. But we talked about a lot of different things. If you had to sort of just boil it down and say, okay, one piece of advice just to get started, what would you tell somebody just to get started? What would your, where would you go with that?
And it seems kind of simplistic, but get out of your own way, right? You bring people in with a level of expertise to do the job. Listen to them. Get out of your own way. Stop hampering them from getting the job done and not listening to what they have to say. If you thought that they had enough knowledge and experience to bring them into the company, then listen to them.
Great advice. Great advice. Well, Patty, thank you so much for your comments today. I think it was really insightful. And it just, you know, the goal here in this was to just get people to think differently, challenge themselves, think about things that they may be missing every day. You go into work and sometimes you're just so engrossed in things that you miss that stuff. So really appreciate your comments tonight. Thank you for being on. And for all of our listeners, thank you for listening. And as always, if you have questions, comments, please reach out to us.
My pleasure.
To learn more about James Moore & Company's manufacturing services, go to jmco.com. And don't forget to subscribe to our More on Manufacturing series to receive updates when new videos and podcasts are released. If you'd like to be a guest, or if there's a topic you'd like to see covered on a future episode, contact us on our website. You can also follow us on social media for more news as the landscape on manufacturing continues to rapidly evolve.